This is episode 10 of the Eco Warrior podcast featuring Sonali Lamba from the Soil Inventory Project.
You're listening to the Eco Warriors podcast featuring inspiring stories from women in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host, Barbara Lee.
When I heard about this little farm called Caney Fork Farms, owned by former Vice President Al Gore, where they were testing out ways to collect and store carbon in the soil, I was incredibly intrigued. Having worked on a carbon project in Kenya, I know that protecting the land is a great way to help sequester carbon from the atmosphere. Because, believe it or not, traditional farming methods actually release carbon into the atmosphere. Soil is the largest terrestrial pool of carbon on Earth. At 120 gigatons of carbon stored in the soil, which is three times more than the amount of carbon in our atmosphere, soil carbon capturing is a real solution to help solve our climate crisis. But how to measure the carbon in our soil? And what are the practices that help best keep carbon in the soil? That's what TSIP, the Soil Inventory Project, is trying to help measure. We sat down with TSIP Executive Director Sonali Lamba to speak about how their project is trying to help measure carbon in our soil. TSIP's primary customers are the farmers, ranchers, and folks who work in land management and have an interest in understanding how carbon might increase their crop yields or how they could use carbon to build a business by putting carbon on their balance sheets. It was fascinating to speak to Sonali about this topic because her background is not in science or farming, but I'll let her tell that part of the story herself. Let's jump in. Hey Sonali, welcome to the Eco Warriors podcast.
Thank you for having me, Barbara. Happy to be here.
Can you tell our audience who you are and what it is that you do?
I'm Sonali Lamba, and I'm the executive director of the Soil Inventory Project. It's a mouthful, so we'll just call it TSIP. TSIP developed a way to collect soil carbon data affordably. The goal of building a national soil carbon inventory or a catalog across the agricultural landscape in the United States. So consider it a place where people can go to understand exactly how much soil carbon is stored underground.
This is a bit of a complex topic, so I was wondering if you could break it down for people who might not understand how there's carbon in soil.
Absolutely. It's incredibly dense, so allow me to take a minute, me who's not a soil scientist, to explain this to you. So soil is the largest terrestrial pool of carbon on Earth. There's 2,500 gigatons of carbon sequestered underground, and that's three times more than the amount of carbon in the atmosphere. That's four times more than the amount stored in all living plants and animals. And soil can be a buffer against atmospheric carbon, and it has the potential to sink even more carbon. So, you know, we're talking obviously nationally, globally about reducing emissions, going electric, the role of hydrogen, solar, wind. There's a lot of innovation happening in carbon capture and storage, and we want to consider agriculture and our just sort of natural processes to be another solution, to be a part of that solution set.
Cool. Can you break down some of these things that you're saying about soil and carbon? You mentioned that it helps to sequester more carbon if we leave carbon in place in the soil.
Yes, exactly. So we believe that there are a set of practices that when managing your soil, call it land management, that can purportedly sink carbon. So take carbon out of the air and sink it underground. And those things are cover cropping, crop rotation, letting animals graze on your land so that their urine and manure actually participate in improving the biodiversity of the soil. Things like no tilling, stop tilling your soil and actually kind of let it to settle. And while we've studied the impact of these practices at a local level, we're still very much in the process of understanding what this looks like at a continental scale. And so it's funny when you see lots of graphs showing the opportunity of what we call regenerative agriculture, these kind of land management practices that are more climate friendly, you see a lot of graphs that show lines going up and to the right, but they don't often have any numbers attached to them. And we think it improves the soil's ability to irrigate water and hold nutrients. And this, of course, helps with flood management and drought resilience, but we can't tell you by how much. And we think it improves crop yield and yield stability, but we can't tell you by how much. So now, if you're one of these farmers or ranchers, a producer who's thinking about transitioning to these practices that can allegedly allow you to not only participate sustainably, but also improve the profitability of your business, this, you're still kind of skeptical because it's an expensive proposition if you don't have any data backing it up. If you don't have any, you know, any proof points to validate exactly what equipment do I need to buy? Exactly what changes are you asking me to make to my family-run farm or to my livelihood without giving me any proof that it's worthwhile? And there are amazing communities of people across the country who are working tirelessly to support producers and those who are interested in making this change, because there's definitely a lot of interest right now. But ultimately, we can't manage what we can't measure. We can't, you know, put our flag on the moon for soil carbon as being part of our climate solution if we can't measure exactly what parts of it can participate in that process. And that's where the Soil Inventory Project really comes in.
How does that work? The way that we were doing it was by just ensuring that folks are not farming the land, since traditional farming methods release a lot of carbon into the atmosphere. How is TSIP working on this?
So that's a great clarification. We aren't participating in capturing more soil. We are a measurement system that's helping the rest of the agricultural community that's participating in supporting soil health and soil science in understanding how certain practices actually can sequester soil carbon.
You mentioned the project is still in development. Where is the project today?
Yeah, and to clarify, the science is certainly there.
That's awesome.
There is a robust field of soil health and soil carbon is coming, kind of being a part of it. This was funny. Someone likened TSIP to the Carfax of soil carbon, or like the Moody's of lending, the Moody's of soil carbon. Yes, very, very sexy analogies. But ultimately, those industries sustain because there is a third party essentially measuring and cataloging the kind of health of the various components that you're considering either purchasing or supporting, right? And so for us, we're seeing investment and support for all kinds of projects around soil carbon right now. In fact, now that for your listeners who've heard the word soil carbon for the first time, I promise you're going to now read about it and see it everywhere because it's actually become incredibly trendy. We consider TSIP to be foundational to innovation, to policy making, to a regulated carbon market, because ultimately we need to know exactly where we're starting. We need to know how much carbon we have underground today in order to know where we're going. And that's where TSIP comes in. So we have a simple, small handheld drill and a mobile app. Land managers can easily use those tools to retrieve soil out of the ground, measure how much carbon is in the soil, and then contribute to building this decentralized national inventory or this catalog. So we can start to see the data and have it improve the system. I was just going to say, you know, there's an opportunity here to not only think about climate-friendly farming, but also improving rural livelihoods. And maybe putting carbon on the balance sheet is a way of also helping businesses. So there's so many applications for understanding where we are today with soil carbon.
Yeah, and that leads right into my next question, which is, who are your customers? It sounds like it's mostly farmers or folks who are working in land management.
Yeah, it's been really fascinating because this is a startup. When I joined TSIP, you know, it was a team of two, and now we're still a really lean team of five. And our kind of channel strategy and partnership strategy has sort of evolved as we've begun talking to more and more people. So yes, farmers, producers, ranchers are our primary customer, if I can use that word in this context. They're the ones who we want to provide this data to, but it's fascinating how much support we're seeing across the food system or across the food supply chain who are also interested in supporting this work. So most notably, these, you know, large precision ag companies, these large, you know, synthetic fertilizer businesses and seed businesses, they are all so incredibly committed to and involved in understanding soil carbon and considering it another revenue stream for their farmers. And so when we talk about who our partners are, it's the folks that we never thought could possibly be before are some of our largest supporters, but it's also the likes of, you know, CPG companies, large associations who work with, you know, dairy farmers and corn growers, all of whom want to help us scale to get this information as quickly as possible.
Yeah. I want to tie this back to listeners and how people can understand and apply this to their own lives. And I don't think that everyone listening owns their own piece of land. So how do I, as a listener at home, help?
I think the way that you can get involved or to participate in some way today is support local farmers. Think about where your food is coming from. Support local growers. Read your labels and, you know, buy organic. That to me seems like the easiest thing to do. I kind of envision a future where when you're at the grocery store, you pick up a box and not only are you reading about nutritional facts, but what if you're also reading about a carbon score and you're understanding, you know, where the box of whatever came from and kind of as it came from out of the ground and up through the processing process and onto a shelf at a grocery store, what's the carbon impact of that whole process? That would be an ideal scenario where as consumers, we actually cared about that enough for it to be something that really changed the system.
Oh my gosh, I love that. So how does the app work? I just got back from doing a permaculture course where we were talking about measuring minerals and elements in the soil as a function of farming. But how does this actually work in terms of what you're trying to accomplish?
Absolutely. So again, if Carfax and Moody's weren't sexy enough analogies for you, I do actually have a couple that I'm sure people are more familiar with. So I often draw parallels between TSIP and Everlywell or 23andMe. Have you ever used one of those products?
I have done a 23andMe and it was fascinating.
Yeah. So, you know, Everlywell, you request a food sensitivity kit, right? So you request the kit, comes home, you do some stuff, you spit in a vial, you draw some blood, send it to a lab, and then you get your results. Meanwhile, your data is being interpolated or analyzed with millions of other data points in the background. We're using that data to find trends. We're unlocking insights that can significantly influence the future of healthcare. And that's actually not that dissimilar from how TSIP works. So you request a kit, download our app and request a kit. And that kit comes with a soil extractor that helps take dirt out of the ground. And using our mobile app, you enter in your property boundaries and we tell you where to drill dirt. And as you get closer to one of those points, your phone buzzes, you get a notification to say, drill here. So you use the extractor, you drill the dirt out of the ground, and you put it into a QR coded bag that we give you. And you scan the QR code and it links the geolocation, the actual point, the site where you drilled from. But it also can include other attributes like what do you grow here? Corn or do you graze cattle? What's your land management practice? Are you using cover cropping or are you still a more conventional farmer? And then once you collected all of your samples, you send them to a conventional lab for conventional analysis. And we send you your fine scale information. We send you your data. And think of it like receiving a heat map of how the carbon is distributed on your soil. And with that, you can actually kind of start to make decisions. You can start to have conversations with your consultants or your local associations, with your neighbor to understand exactly how what you're doing is similar or dissimilar to what they're doing.
That's so interesting.
But as our data set grows, we can start to tell you, we can start to tell producers and the market more broadly how similar lands perform with different land management practices. We can start to explore the national carbon resource because ultimately we're nonprofit. We exist in the public trust. So our intention is to publish everything that we can. Of course, respecting the data privacy of our growers and partners, we intend to publish anonymized data that is critical for us to see more innovation and that policy, that better policy I mentioned before, and who knows what else. So, you know, this is interesting because like I mentioned, there's just so much cool technology happening around carbon capture and storage. And we don't have a laser beam. We're not trying to do anything. This is a unique and novel combination of existing tools and existing methods that we know are sound and work. And, you know, what we're doing today is combining ground truth data coming out of the ground, field data coming out of the ground with that remote sensed information coming from satellites and above ground so that we can scale this to a place where the information can get smarter and people can make better choices. The field data that we're collecting through the app will increase the accuracy and the models that we use are going to just create the efficiency in the system.
What does this actually mean then for the actions that people should be taking? They collect the data and then what do they do?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is going to influence their land management practices and understanding whether they want to make the investment into new equipment, whether they want to make the investment into, you know, crop rotation, for example. Because remember, these are all really expensive propositions and the transition is challenging. But part of also knowing where we are today and being able to tell farmers or some of their big influential partners, the people who are actually buying, you know, grain grain from them or cattle from them, they can actually begin to receive potentially financial support to assist in the transition. And again, all of this is conjecture. These are all kind of my dreams as Sonali of where this can go. But the folks who are most interested in what we're doing, it's not just, first and foremost, it's the landowners and the producers, but it's also we're seeing carbon markets being really fascinated by having this information. And finally, being able to possibly regulate carbon markets for soil the way that they are for trees and other things. We're also think there's a great opportunity for crop insurers to also understand either, you know, risk and reward of more climate-friendly land management practices.
So Nally, how did you get into this? Because you mentioned you're not a soil scientist, but it sounds like you're really passionate and knowledgeable about this field.
I am not a soil scientist. Someone told me to write down 10 moments in my life when I was the happiest. And at the top of the list was this time when I was 17 and 18 years old. I was doing research at the University of Florida, their food and agricultural sciences. They had an extension office near where I lived. And I was leaving school early and I was driving to the lab and I was like often the last one there locking up. And I was studying intercropping and biological pest control. I was studying this wasp that could help control this parasitic moth from doing damage to cabbage and collard greens and the mustard family more broadly.
Oh, interesting. That's such a huge issue. I just experienced this up in the mountains.
Again, a top 10 moment from 20 years ago. But when I, you know, this presented itself, I felt like I kind of manifested it. I spent almost 3 months with the science leads, the co-founders here, understanding the science and just understanding how complex the food system is, but also just getting smarter on nonprofit management. I mean, it's a new set of rules for me, the importance of governance. Most importantly, it was made clear to me within the first 5 minutes of that 3 month exploration that the founders' goal was to support Black, Brown, and Indigenous farming communities first. Our mission, and we had the chance to kind of crystallize our core values really early in creating our company. And, you know, we talk about believing in equality of access to data and that social inclusivity is necessary. It's a requirement for data integrity.
That's so great. Thanks for sharing that, Sonali.
And further, acknowledging that what we call today regenerative agriculture, it's, you know, so sexy and it feels so new, but it's actually an age old Indigenous farming traditions. And I think joining a team that centers this history and the intersectionality of environment and social and racial justice while also remaining science-led and science-first and collaborative. And it was just an opportunity I had to be a part of. I failed to mention this earlier, the origin story of TSIP. We were formerly called MySOC, My Soil Organic Carbon, very challenging name. But our two co-founders met at Caney Fork Farms, which is former Vice President Al Gore's farm in Carthage, Tennessee. There is where this concept was really incubated. One of our co-founders, Chris Covey, kind of brought the discipline around measuring soil out of the ground, drilling holes, getting dirt. And then Bruno Basso is our co-founder who understands remote sensing and modeling at scale. And so the two of them came together with Mr. Gore with the intention of figuring out how can agriculture be part of the climate solution. And the three of them together ultimately realized that we still need to figure out how to measure this stuff first. And so all of this led me to just appreciate understanding where we are. And it's really hard when it feels like the world's, you know, a dumpster fire and there's this like massive sense of urgency to fix everything now. I also feel a tremendous sense of calm and curiosity and being very intentional and deliberate in the way that this organization has evolved over time and in the brand that we're putting out there. So yeah, this is a great moment for me. I'm really, really excited to be here.
The thing that I love to track back to is that there are lots of actions that individuals can take and climate change is a really big problem. So everyone needs to help tackle it. And I would love for you to tell the folks at home who are listening what they can do to help.
Yeah. I don't know if you listen to Ayanna Johnson's podcast, How to Save a Planet. There was one episode about like, is my carbon footprint making a difference? And she acknowledged like how discouraging it can be as an individual to realize like we're barely a drop in the bucket, but that shouldn't stop us from trying to do our part. And again, I'll go back to and reiterate where I think soil carbon can play a role here studying and educating yourselves on what soil carbon is, but you see it today and you can influence it in your food choices. So supporting local farmers, you know, joining your local CSA program if you have one. Understanding, learning what a CSA program is if you don't know already, buying organic. And I think just realizing that ultimately the change has to be at a community scale, at a federal level. It has to be systemic, like most important things. And we can pinpoint where the carbon is coming from. And so our solution should be pinpointed too. And this is going to, I think, help in that vein. But most importantly, I think assist in a wanted transition, hopefully be a part of a larger solution that everyone will be able to see very clearly one day.
Yes, I am here for that. So Nali, any myths or things that you've heard that you want to help dispel?
I think more than a myth I want to bust, I think I also want to just acknowledge what a unique time we're living in right now, especially having like two young children. And you've heard people say this to inspire us over the years, like creating a better world for our children. Really? That's what we're doing right now. We're trying to create a world and a better world and a sustainable world for our children. And I know that can feel incredibly charged thing to say, but at the same time, like my children are coming home. My 8-year-old is coming home and talking to me about GHGs. They're learning about this. My son, who's 3 years old, tonight at bedtime told me that he wants to be a dinosaur who roars at people who litter.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I'd be scared if a dinosaur roared at me when I was littering. Not that I litter, but I'm just saying it sounds kind of scary.
So they're learning these things. And they're contextualizing it as children. And I think we have to acknowledge that and meet them at their level and also do our work as grownups, figure out what's our version of turning into dinosaurs and roaring at people who are littering. That's our job right now. And it's a lot more fun when you think of it that way. So it doesn't have to be scary, but it is incredibly important.
Nali, this has been such an amazing conversation. If people want to find you, where can they look you up?
Thank you, Barbara, for giving me this platform to talk about this and to your listeners for dweebing out with me for a few minutes. We are at thesoilinventoryproject.org. It's a really light landing page at the moment, but sign up, receive some of our updates. We're intending to publish a lot more content and to be a part of educating people on what we're doing and helping people learn more and figure out how they can get involved. So we'd love to stay in touch with all of your listeners.
So Nali, thank you again so much for taking time to be on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks a lot.
We hope that you felt inspired after this conversation with Sonali, both because I think Sonali embodies this idea that you don't have to have a background in science or land management to help work on these problems. And because I'm now obsessed with the idea that I could see on future packaging information that will help educate me on the impact that what I buy has on the planet in terms of carbon impact. Go check out TSIP and learn more about carbon in our soil, and then we'll see you again next week for another inspiring conversation with a company that's growing stakes in the laboratory. Stay green, Eco Warriors.
The Eco Warriors podcast is produced by Hansel Rodriguez. Research assistance by Belinda Chu and hosted by Barbara Lee. Thanks for listening. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram at Eco Warriors Podcast.
This is really random. Can someone just like get the app and like just randomly help you measure carbon?
Oh, yeah, you could. Our app is still in development. It's not live in the App Store yet, but Barbara, you'll have to have me back on. So I can recruit your listeners to actually go out into our fields with us and help drill some holes.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's gorilla gardening. Why not gorilla carbon measuring?
I love that. I'm going to reach out to them tomorrow. Yeah.